The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We are back, and we were talking to a guy a minute ago, and I wanted to give him a chance to finish the story. Bruce, go right ahead. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, that's okay. You got to do what you got to do, Paul. But anyway, getting back to the story, the announcer for the radio station here was talking about how different these guys looked. And it just, like I said, knocked me in the head about back in the 80s when I watched the guys working out at Virginia Tech. And so I put two and two together and I called a radio station up. And I said, listen, Beamer's following his daddy's lineage. I saw the same thing you saw today with his players on the field. They were lean. They beat Clemson. They blocked punts. They were in the backfield the whole day. They were quicker than Clemson. And that was the first game of the season that year. I said, he is following his daddy's teachings. So y'all are going to be okay if he's successful as his daddy was. And the announcer went crazy.
I hope you're right. Thank you for the call, Bruce. Appreciate you finishing the story. Fred is up next. Hey, Fred, good afternoon.
Paul, this is Fred from Alabama. I have been a long-time listener for you since
Thank you.
Birmingham.
Thank you very much.
But call today is about Mac Brown. The name of his location in the summer in North Carolina is Linville.
Linville, okay.
Which is near Grandfather Mountain, and we...
It shows you my lack of understanding of the rich and famous of the mountains of North Carolina.
Well, that's fine. It's a beautiful place. Mac is a great guy, and we have had many a conversation about football. But a quick story about Mac. When he took over at North Carolina, right before the season starts, I wrote him a note saying, best of luck until you play Alabama. And he wrote me back personally. He didn't have a secretary type something, but he wrote it in his own handwriting, a very nice acknowledgement of my best wishes. After the season is halfway over, and he obviously was going to be a big improvement, wrote him another note. And within a week of me writing the note, here again, handwritten note acknowledging my best wishes, which I think is fairly unusual for a guy who gets hundreds, if not thousands, of communications probably weekly. So just wanted to add my...
Now, that is interesting, Fred. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I had a mentor of mine many, many years ago, early in my career, tell me a similar thing. He said, you can never go wrong writing a personal note. It's a lost art. My only deficiency in writing personal notes, and I have all the stationery that you're supposed to have, is that even when I write a personal note, nobody can read it. My handwriting is so dreadful. I barely got through that in grammar school. And other than the name on the card, you probably would have no earthly idea of knowing what I said. And for those who few of you out there who have received something from me, you have a better chance of deciphering Russian. Thanks for the call, though. Let's get to Lee in Arkansas. Hey, Lee, good afternoon to you. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for taking my call, Paul.
Thank you.
And to kind of go along with the guy before me, has to do with Birmingham. My question is, why is Bill Clark not looked at any more than he is for big coaching jobs in college?
I think that is a vexing question. I asked someone, I think it was the Auburn job, why he does not get more consideration. And I heard a rather convoluted answer. And I think some of it just involved, you know, sometimes you just have to act like you really want a job to get one. And I'm not sure Bill does. You know, he's you know, high school coach turned college coach, now a very successful coach. And I don't think he is one that really embraces the process very well.
Well, that's the thing, though. He's been an incredibly successful college coach.
Right.
Isn't that what everybody looks for?
No, they should. You're right.
How anyone could have done the job that he did.
I don't.
Done at UAB to come back from nothing. It's amazing.
No, I mean, he took over at UAB. He had a bowl eligible team. The president buried the program, literally burned it to a crisp. Howie, I still think, and you're going to hear a lot about Bill Clark. I don't know what their first game is in August or September, but you know, when they open that new stadium, I think the nation will pay attention to what he has accomplished, because that was such a long shot, and you know, he stayed the course. But I think it's a great question. When I see some people hired at various schools, no names mentioned, and he does not get serious consideration, it's bewildering. I think UAB is the benefit, and maybe he is one of those guys that when he was coaching in college, high school, in I think it was Prattville, Alabama, maybe he just said, you know, if I ever get one of these jobs, I'm going to embrace it and stay with it. Some people are like that. A lot of people are not always chasing, but if he never takes another job, he will be forever remembered for what he accomplished. And he is accomplishing at UAB. It's a fantastic story. Thank you for asking the question. And Guppy is up next. Hello, Guppy.
Hello, Paul. Nice to get through to you.
Thank you.
I'm sitting here watching you on television and talking on the telephone. The reason for the call, I missed the Mack Brown interview. But I want to welcome him to North Carolina as a head coach. It's a great school. I'm Georgia Bulldog through and through. But North Carolina and Georgia have some rivalries that go back a long way to the Sugar Bowl, which I saw. But they both claim to be the oldest public universities in the country. The story is North Carolina was opened their doors first, but Georgia was chartered first. Two fine schools. I'm a graduate. My father was a graduate, and I have four children that graduated from Georgia, and we're all pretty good Bulldogs. But I did want to take this opportunity to welcome Paul Brown. I mentioned earlier that I have a cousin that's the tennis coach at the University of North Carolina, and he has a very successful program. And I hope that Mack Brown will fit in with that season of superiority that they have there.
Well, I think he will. Hey, Guppy, thanks for the call. I think Mack's fitting it quite well. And remember, he was there previously, so he's adjusted well to whatever the air of superiority that permeates over Chapel Hill. Let's check in with Nancy, who is in Texas. Hello, Nancy.
Hi, Paul. I'm calling about Coach Brown. I'm so glad you got to hear him, because I'm a great Texas Longhorn fan, and he was a great coach at Texas. The only reason he didn't win two national championships is that Hi, Paul. This is Nancy.
Yeah, Nancy, disregard the television and just talk to me on the phone, okay?
Okay. I'm so glad that y'all got to hear him, because I watch him so much at Texas.
Yeah, you said something about the only thing that cost him winning two national championships at Texas. I'm curious what that was.
Was it Colt McCoy got hurt.
Okay.
He five plays into the game, and yeah, he got hurt in his shoulder, and
yeah,
it took him 3 months to get well.
Well, Nancy,
so
thank you for the call,
major,
and you're too nice of a woman for me to argue with you. But I was at the game, of course. I remember it differently. That call that got the play that Colt got hurt on was a terrible call. I'm not blaming Mack. He wasn't the offensive coordinator, but I'm sure he heard what it was. And I don't know if I have another 10 years left in me or 50 years left in me, but I hope I never hear another Texas fan claim incorrectly that if Colt McCoy had not been hurt, they would have won that game. They were not going to win that game. That Alabama team was far too good. And it's one of the most archaic excuses I think I have ever heard. And Texas fans who haven't come close to a national championship since and probably won't anytime in the near future just keep hanging on to poor old Colt McCoy as their reason why Nick Saban was able to beat them in that national championship game at the Rose Bowl. We will take a break. Jimmy Dykes is joining us next to talk about the weekend in college basketball.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we welcome you back. The weekend has arrived, and the Sweet 16 games are just around the corner, and we really look forward to digging into some of the key games with Jimmy Dykes, who is nice enough to make time for us this afternoon. Jimmy, thank you for being here, and let's get right to it, because both Alabama and Arkansas are pretty big favorites in these games. They seem like mismatches until you start thinking about this point in the season. Let's start with the Arkansas game against Oral Roberts. They're not supposed to be here, but they are.
Well, Paul, first of all, you can't luck your way into the Sweet 16. You got to be a good basketball team in a lot of areas to get this far in the tournament. ORU certainly checks a lot of those boxes, as does Arkansas. So interesting thing about this ballgame is, you know, these two teams have already played once this year back on December the 20th. And ORU had Arkansas down 12 points on their home floor. Arkansas had to fight and scratch and come back and win the game. So I think ORU comes in. I know they do. I know their staff. They come in with a lot of confidence, and rightfully so, because they have two of the best. If there's 25 or the 30 best players still left in this tournament, ORU has two of them in Max Asmus and Kevin O'Banner. Those two kids, as you know, are averaging about 55 points a game between them. Asmus leads the country in scoring at 24 points a game. Those two guys alone in their ball screen, pick and pop action is a real problem. It's a real problem to defend because they shoot the ball at such a high clip. ORU's making about 11 three-point shots a game. And interesting, Arkansas has not defended the three-point shot very well so far in this tournament. They're lucky to kind of be in the Sweet 16 if you just base it on how well they've defended the three. So there's a lot of things inside this ball game that you have to look for. Right off the bat, I will look to see how is Arkansas defending Max Asmus, because he's 6'1", and he, to me, is the fastest guy on the floor every time ORU is in a ball game. It doesn't matter who he's playing. Like, this guy has speed that's uncommon, so Arkansas has to contain that speed, stay in front of the ball, and take away ORU's ability to shoot the three-point shot. So I don't see either team winning this thing by double figures. I really don't. I think it's going to go down to the last couple of minutes, the last couple of possessions. And Arkansas's small ball lineup has been really good. The four guards with Justin Smith. I think you'll see a lot of that kind of a lineup on Saturday from Eric Musselman.
Jimmy, going back to the last game for Arkansas, and it was a horror show at the end. I mean, all of a sudden this game was won, and as you alluded to, it started to get away from them. Did you see anything there that would concern you as Arkansas turns the corner toward the Sweet 16?
Yeah, Paul, a little bit. I think their shot selection at times, not only in that last ball game, but throughout the year, has kind of gotten away from them a little bit. And it's interesting to me that Eric Musselman told me back in early January, I believe it was, he and I were talking on the phone one day, and he said that this was the first time in his coaching career, talking about this season, that he's had to pull his guys in his office one-on-one and say, look, this is a good shot, this is a bad shot. He's always given his guys back in Nevada complete green lights to play, and that's Arkansas kind of got into a style there for a while back in SEC play that their shot selection was not good. They were getting shots on the first side of the floor. They were getting non-paint touch threes. A lot of things that Eric had to get control of back in early conference play. You'll see that in stretches for Arkansas right now. So I think their shot selection has to be really good against ORU. If it is, I think they'll get some really good looks. ORU has been really good at defending the three ball in this tournament. ORU has not been good at defending the ball around the rim. If Arkansas can have success driving the ball, getting rim shots, getting layups, getting offensive rebound opportunities, that's going to really help them. How do you get good offensive rebound opportunities? You take good shots on your first shot. And I think Arkansas has probably spent a lot of time talking about that this week.
Should I know coaches don't want to look ahead, but we're fans right now and analysts in your case. Right. Should our Arkansas get past this game, then it does start to get a little more difficult with Baylor in that regional. How would you see that one playing out?
If Arkansas and Baylor played a best of five series, my money would go on Baylor. I just think their guard play is a notch above everybody else's, but that's not what it is. As you know, it's a one game scenario. So what I like about Arkansas is you have to have depth at your guard position if you have any shot of beating the Baylor Bears. And that's what Arkansas has. I've talked about their small ball lineup that Eric Musselman's been going to, basically with four guards and Justin Smith on the inside, who at times plays like a big guard on the offensive end. So I think Arkansas is more than capable of beating Baylor in a one-game scenario. What I like about Arkansas is they don't rely on one area of the floor in order for them to advance. At Alabama, we know they have to make threes if they're going to get to the Final Four and maybe get to that national championship game. Arkansas, to me, is a little bit more of a balanced offense in terms of how they play the game, how they see the game, and they're very unselfish. It's uncommon, Paul, that Arkansas's two best players, Justin Smith is a transfer from Indiana in Arkansas' system for less than 6 months still, and Moses Moody is a true freshman who's going to be a lottery pick. Those two guys, though, have all the reasons to play an unselfish style of ball, but they have none of that in their system at all. It's a very unselfish Arkansas team, tremendous on the defensive end, tremendous with creating steals, very fast with how they play. And if you have any shot of beating a team like Baylor, you have to check those boxes, and I think Arkansas does.
Let's jump ahead to Sunday when Alabama plays the 11th seed. UCLA had to play their way into the tournament. Break that game down for us, Jimmy.
It's interesting. I talked with Mick Cronin after they won their first four play-in game, and he told me in not so many words, we are far from being done. I think that's a UCLA team that probably felt like they didn't belong in that first four game. I think they feel like they've been in the Pac-12. It's kind of been overlooked by the national media all year long. And I think UCLA has a real big chip on their shoulder that Alabama better be ready for. What I trust about Alabama, Paul, maybe as much as anything, is I think they have a swagger and a cockiness about them that you have to have if you're going to go deep in this NCAA tournament. They've proven it all year long by winning the regular season, the SEC tournament title. They kind of feed off that that passion and that little bit of an edge and swagger that Nate Oates has as a head coach. So I don't think you're going to – UCLA is not going to punk Alabama. Alabama is built for a game like that. And it's interesting that Mick Cronin has a team right now that has shot their way into the Sweet 16 instead of defending their way into the Sweet 16, because typically you go back and look, watch Mick Cronin's career, they've kind of dirtied the game up, turned it into a fist fight and a body blow game, and just beat you up, and that's how they advance. This UCLA team is not wired that way. They're a very good shooting ball club. The guy that leads them right now is Johnny Juzang. Everybody in the SEC remembers that name? Transferred from Kentucky, didn't get his minutes at Kentucky, didn't get his shots at Kentucky, goes to UCLA. Now the kid's averaging 22 points a game in this NCAA tournament. I think the length of Alabama on the perimeter is going to be a big deal in this game. If you're going to take away a shooter like Juzang, who's all of 6'6 or 6'7, you have to have a 6'6, 6'7 athlete or two that you can throw out on a Juzang and try to take him out of the ball game. We know Alabama's made for that type of a deal. Alabama defensively is outstanding. I know the national media likes to talk about their offense, the analytics that Nate Oates has with the three-pointers, the rim shots, and the free throws. This Alabama team would not be where they are without being an outstanding defensive team. I like Alabama in this game because I think they're built defensively to take away the shooting ability of UCLA.
And I know it wouldn't be till Tuesday, but I think the other game Sunday is really intriguing when you think about Florida State and Michigan. How do you see that game?
Paul, I like Florida State a lot. And maybe it's because they are one of the – I think I did maybe 10 games in person this year prior to the SEC tournament when we all went to Nashville. And I got my eyes on Florida State in person at Louisville. I think they're terrific. I know their size is a real problem for teams to handle. Their depth is a real problem. They can score. They're an older team. They got seven-footers around the rim. I think Michigan's in real trouble against Florida State. I picked Florida State to be right there in that Elite Eight game just because of how good they were last year. And if you think about this, Florida State, Scotty Barnes is going to be a lottery pick, and he doesn't start for Florida State. That will be the third year in a row Florida State has produced a lottery pick that came off the bench. It tells you a lot about their culture. It tells you a lot about how they play the game. It tells you a lot about their depth, their balance. I like Florida State a lot. I like Alabama and Florida State playing for a shot to go to the Final Four. And that game could go either way, because if you're going to beat Alabama, you have to have defensive depth and you have to have size, and Florida State has both.
Jimmy, finally, just some thoughts, not so much on the court, but what you have seen this year from both Alabama and Arkansas. Not much was expected, and two relatively new coaches in the SEC in their second year have really, not really, they have surprised almost everyone.
Paul, they have sent a collective message together, Alabama and Arkansas, that the SEC is much more than Kentucky in basketball. And Kentucky fans probably don't want to hear that right now, but Alabama and Arkansas delivered on that statement. They finished first and second in the league. They're in the Sweet 16. They have relatively young coaches with a passion and an energy and a style about them that has done really well in the SEC in 2 years' time. Alabama and Arkansas now are in that Sweet 16 waving the flag of the SEC. And I don't think it's going to go away. I think Eric Musselman and Nate Oates both will entertain the thoughts of the Texas job, the Indiana job, whatever. I don't think they're going anywhere. I think they love where they are. I think it has elevated SEC basketball. And those two guys, as head coaches, we know this. They have zero back down in them in terms of recruiting, going up against any school you throw at them on the recruiting trail. They have zero back down in them as a head coach in terms of how they coach the game. They're not afraid to put their opinions out there, sometimes aren't popular, whether it's going against Coach K or whoever it is. And I just think Alabama and Arkansas have really elevated basketball once again in the SEC. The SEC basketball has been on the rise in the last 5 or 6 years. We know that. But for the SEC to be in this position without Kentucky being in there right now, with Tennessee bowing out early, I think the SEC is in really, really good shape right now basketball-wise going forward. And what Commissioner Sankey has done and what Mike Slide, the foundation he laid back several years ago with the non-conference scheduling, it's all coming to fruition. And now the depth of the SEC just getting deeper and deeper every year.
Jimmy, thank you. A lot of people are nodding their head in agreement with you on what you finished the conversation with. Be well. We'll talk soon. Always great to catch up.
Okay, Paul. Have a good weekend, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Jimmy. Jimmy Dykes, his analysis of the Sweet 16. We are coming back. More of your phone calls here at 855-242-7285. And also, we'll be joined by one of the greats in SEC history, former major leaguer Jeff Brantley. He will join us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Now tonight, getting ready for the weekend, the basketball, but also baseball. There's a huge baseball game. Well, there's always a huge baseball game in the SEC, but when you have the number two and three teams in the country playing, it really makes a big difference. Georgia and A&M coming up right after us. And the series I was referring to, Arkansas and Mississippi State, you can catch that on SEC Plus. This afternoon, well, actually, 7:30. Speaking of Mississippi State, let's welcome in Jeff Brantley, who had quite a career at Mississippi State and later in the major leagues, pitched in a World Series, and of course has done a lot of commentating work. And Jeff, it's only been 40 years, but I vaguely remember covering you as a quarterback at Berry High School. Is my memory as good as, is it better than yours? Do you remember much about those days when you were a star quarterback? Good afternoon.
I do, Paul, and it's good to be on your show. I do remember you coming to Berry High School and covering us. It was interesting because all of us at that point in time were Alabama fans, and you had just written a big article on the University of Alabama football, and then all of a sudden we see you standing on the sidelines at Berry High School. So that was pretty important for a 17-year-old kid.
Well, thank you. It's great to catch up with you. And there's a lot I want to ask you about. It includes one of the most famous moments in baseball history. But I want to ask you about this series first, because it's almost become cliche in the SEC to talk about big games like this. I mean, you can go through a lot of baseball season and not get a 2-3. And I don't want to say this is an ordinary SEC series for late March, but it really is. But you get these every week.
Yeah, I think it is incredible the largeness that baseball possesses in the SEC. I mean, we've talked about football for so long down here, but it's a lot about baseball this time of the year, especially in Starkville, Mississippi. I would imagine that with the COVID rules being really relaxed in this state, anybody who is a baseball fan in this state will be in Starkville this weekend.
No doubt. I'm every time I'm in Mississippi or LSU or Florida for one of these weekends in the spring, it's amazing to me, and I'm maybe even to you, because although you played at Mississippi State, which has always been the go-to in terms of changing the culture of baseball, how big these things are. What was it like when you played? I know it was big, but compared to now, how would you make the comparison?
It was pretty much everybody close up shop and let's head to the baseball field. I mean, that's kind of how it felt back in that day. And everyone treated us like celebrities. I don't know that we qualified as such at the point in time, but you know, we just played baseball, and we happened to have an awfully good ball club. We didn't win the World Series, but we got there. We played good baseball at Mississippi State, and a lot of us went on to play in the big leagues. Rafael Palmeiro, Will Clark, Bobby Thigpen. But we had a lot of other great players on that club besides just the four guys that get a lot of notoriety.
Jeff, I know that most people that are familiar with you know where I'm going next, and I'm wondering how many times, how many days of your life have you not been asked about one of the most harrowing and scary and memorable moments in sports history when you were about to pitch in the World Series and an earthquake occurred?
Yeah, I don't know that. Well, I hope nobody else has to ever go through that. That was my rookie year in San Francisco, and we had come home. We'd lost two against the Oakland A's. We come back to San Francisco to play game three. And just as we're walking on the field, Paul, the earthquake hits. And in San Francisco, all of the locker room area was underground, and you had to go through a tunnel to get out onto the field, and there were supposed to be emergency lights and the such in there, and that didn't really work too well. I can be honest with you, because I was in the tunnel heading out to get announced at that time. Pretty scary moment. My parents were there. They were there for 10 days and never got to see one World Series game, so they never got to see me pitch in the World Series.
And I want to make sure people understand, because, often we do experience earthquakes or tremors, and it's not a big deal. This was a horrific deal. You already alluded to it. It was like watching one of these big movies where, it looks like the world is coming to an end. When did you realize how bad it was?
Once we came through the tunnel and got onto the field, we got a little more than what the fans in the stands got. We got wire reports from the East Bay and really more information than the folks in the stands got, because nothing really, from a visual standpoint, happened inside the stadium. After about 4 minutes, I think the fans were chanting, "Let's play ball." But they had no idea that the Bay Bridge had come down. They had no idea that the 880 Expressway had collapsed and that the marina was on fire. I mean, nobody really knew about this stuff until hours afterwards. So it was quite the experience.
What did you do during that 10-day period? I mean, I know you want to get ready for the next game, but that's not the easiest thing to do.
No, a lot of us, you go back to your apartments or the homes that you were staying at, and after about 3 or 4 days, I mean, the Giants stayed in town. The A's left to work out, and we just did a lot of kind of public things, just trying to keep people's spirits up, because a lot of folks lost their lives, and it was really a really tough experience for any person to go through, much less somebody that's lost a family member or something along that line, and then you're still talking about trying to play a World Series. It kind of took all the momentum out of even going back to play a sport at that point in time.
And you said it took 10 days to get back to finish it out, is that right?
Yeah, it took us 10 days to get back, and then we played game three and game four. And, I mean, there were still a lot of people at the ballpark. It just didn't have the same kind of meaning. I mean, when you're spending time with somebody that's lost a loved one and then you're heading back out to the field to play, it kind of takes away a lot of incentive.
Yeah, I mean, I know we spent so much time in the last year talking about how weird the stadiums were with no fans and now with limited fans, but I don't think there's anything to quite compare to that. As you reflect back on your career, both in the bigs and, of course, at Mississippi State, I know that it's certainly in the rearview mirror, but does it ever get old talking about it? I mean, it had to be just an incredible life to live.
Well, I'll say it like this, Paul. I guess this is probably the best way for me to say it. Mississippi State, I don't think you ever forget playing there. It's like playing for your family. It's like your last name. You're never going to forget Feinbaum. I'm never going to forget Brantley. And I'll never forget Mississippi State. And when you play there, that's just the way it is.
Well, I am so thankful that you came on. I'd love to continue this conversation throughout the baseball season, because it's so special and it's such a great time of the year. I know we're obsessing over spring football starting and the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. But on a Friday night, as you said, in Starkville, Mississippi, and pretty much anywhere else, it is very, very special.
It is, Paul, and I don't think any of us really realized how important it was to have fans in the ballpark. You mentioned that earlier. Whether you're a baseball player or a football player, what kind of venue you're involved in, there is nothing like hearing the roar of the crowd. And I imagine whether you're at Arkansas or whether you're on Mississippi State's club, you're going to hear a lot of roar of the crowd at Beauty Noble come this weekend.
Well, Jeff, thanks for making the time. It was really great to remember back, even to my salad days as a reporter. But come back soon. We love talking to you tonight.
Love your show, Paul. Take care, man.
Thank you very much. Jeff Brantley, of course, in the Hall of Fame and Mississippi State, and such great memories and such harrowing memories as well of that October night in 89. We will take a break. More to come. More of your phone calls as we continue right here.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We started with Mac Brown a couple hours ago, really one of the more revealing interviews we've had all year. And we are going to continue with more of your phone calls right now and check in with Mitch, who is in South Carolina. Hello, Mitch.
Hello, Mr. Paul. How are you?
Quite well. Thanks for the call.
Will you please be patient with me for a second?
You bet.
Earlier, the gentleman that called that shared his wonderful memories with his father and lamenting, you know, the past and everything. I want to admit, I was jealous for a minute because, you know, I didn't have those memories. And I still don't have those memories. But I want to share something that, because I'm sure I'm not the only one listening to this show who went through anything like I went through. And I hope if I can touch somebody, you know, Daddy shot my mama when I was 5 years old. He hung himself. I want to say I might have been 11. I went through what crime shows are wrote about until I was 10 years old in foster care. Once I went to the children's home, my life changed. Now, I say all that because I endured a buttload of misery as a child. But, and I have lost my foot. I lost my foot a few years back. And you ask him what were some of the memories that he remembers the most. I don't have memories with my family. Nobody in my family was there to spend time with me when I lost my foot. But I have memories with such wonderful friends. And I have memories with such wonderful people in my life. There's nobody in my life that is blood relatives. But my life is full. But this past year, all that was cut off from me, and your show became part of my family. And that's why I reach out with some things that really don't matter, things that are just stupid, but I have a kinship with your show that you'll never know that it means I had something to come home every day at 3 o'clock to look forward to. And what I'm trying to share is if anyone's out there depressed, sad, don't allow that to be your defining moment. Find someone. It doesn't have to be someone that calls you son, daughter, whatever. Just find someone that's going to make you feel like you deserve to feel like. And I think that's really what I wanted to say.
Well, Mitch, I must tell you that you mean a lot to you mean a great deal to us as well. And you know, when I hear a story like that, and I know everyone else listening at the same time, you're a gift to us, and I appreciate from the bottom of my heart what you shared. It's so meaningful, and so important to so many people.
I just the Matt from San Antonio, the I-Man, Jeff from Ohio, they're all a part of my family. And I don't know how to express that in a way that most people can concept that a TV show can be that important to somebody.
Well, Mitch, but I thank you. We're at the end of the hour, but you be well, my friend, and we will see you very soon. Thank you so much for sharing it.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.